1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
This episode is brought to you by Cartier.
From the wild, free, and glamorous spirit of the 1980s came a Cartier watch design that was equal parts jewelry and watchmaking. Panthère de Cartier mirrors the movements of the Maison's emblematic animal, a creative signature that has been reinvented time and time again since her first sighting in the Cartier registers. Shop Panthère de Cartier and more from the culture of design at Cartier.com.
Welcome to Who What Wear with Hillary Kerr, your direct line to the designers, stylists, beauty experts, editors, and tastemakers who are shaping the ever-evolving world of fashion. I'm your host, Hillary Kerr, and today I'm passing things over to our incredible managing editor, Sarah Yang, who sits down with Golden Globe-winning actress Awkwafina, aka Nora Lum, for our September cover story. Sarah asks Nora about her many groundbreaking roles, including The Farewell, Crazy Rich Asians, and the latest Marvel movie, Shang-Chi, where Nora takes on her first part in a major action film. Plus, they talk about how Nora has navigated fame, fashion, and her connection to family as she quickly becomes a household name. It's all coming up on Who What Wear.
Hi, Nora.
Hey.
Thanks again for chatting today. And I heard that the shoot went well, so I'm glad to hear that.
It was so fun.
So first I wanted to start off, and I know you can't talk too much about it, but I wanted to chat about Shang-Chi a little bit. And I wanted to know, how did you get involved? How did you come to that decision that, you know, you wanted to be in this big Marvel film?
So when I first heard about it, my team had called and kind of was like, hey, you're not going to believe it, but there's interest for you in a Marvel movie. And I remember definitely feeling excited by that, but I was like, which Marvel? Like, what is it about? You know, there wasn't a lot of information at that time on it, just that it was kind of a new take on an existing comic book character that definitely has its own history. And that interested me, and the martial arts aspect was interesting. And I didn't really know what I was going to do, but I met the director, Destin, and I was a really big fan of some of his other movies. He's done like really kind of heartfelt indies. And I remember just hearing his pitch on like what he wanted to do with this movie and this new superhero. And by the end of the meeting, I was like, I absolutely have to do this. It's so cool. So yeah, the story definitely helped.
Okay, good. I feel like it's cool that Marvel chooses directors that are a little bit not quite action directors normally.
Yeah, totally.
And entering the Marvel universe is such a big, crazy thing. Like the fans are just insane and there's a lot of scrutiny. And like, are you ready to be in that? And I feel like I would definitely give up all the secrets or whatever by accident.
I mean, I'm so scared of accidentally just doing that because I know that the stakes are really high in the MCU with the spoilers. I'm not at all prepared for what the fans might have to say. I think that definitely it's a big world and I hope it's going to be all right. Yeah.
Yeah. So you did Raya and then you have this Marvel movie and then you have The Little Mermaid coming up and you're playing Scuttle and it sounds awesome. And like, how is it working with Disney and being in that whole fold?
You know, it's really, really cool because what those movies have, you know, in terms of my own childhood, the significance of like The Little Mermaid, reprising a character that I've really always kind of loved. It's such an honor to be to work with them. And I think, you know, when we were shooting Shang-Chi, I describe like that whole world is just this very utopian film universe, not only in the fact that like the food is great and everything just is smooth, but there's a real family aspect. I think everyone there are genuine creators. They have childlike instincts, I think, that make, you know, the Disney movies so well. Everyone on the team, it's a real place for like creation.
Are you able to like improv and ad lib a little bit I know that you're probably used to doing that a lot in other films.
Yeah, 100%. And that's also like, you know, Destin, I think, gave me the freedom to feel safe doing that, because you don't want to do improv where it's not wanted.
Yeah.
It's too embarrassing. Yeah. Yeah.
So you started as a rapper, and I think we got our first taste of Awkwafina through that. But I think you've made a lot of interesting career moves since then, and you've been able to do comedy, rapping, drama, animated films, and now action films. And I'm wondering if you had sort of a strategy. What was the journey through there?
You know, I think it's crazy, because I think you do have to think strategically in what you do. But also, I think that a series of random things and events, especially in the beginning, it's like there really was no roadmap. And oftentimes I felt like I was on this really awesome ride that was just kind of going, and I was just enjoying it. I think the only thing that has been consistent is knowing what roles I want to take on. I think that being very judicious about like what's coming your way, and that's not to say that it's bad, or that, you know, there are roles that I know I won't be good at doing. And then there are other things, but I think any genre, I really don't have a preference toward anything. I find it all very thrilling. I just endlessly want to try new things. But strategicness of it doesn't exist. And that's kind of maybe the price you pay in this. Like you can try and make the right decisions, but ultimately you don't know what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah. And it's kind of cool that you can be sort of a chameleon and you're not pigeonholed into like one specific character or genre.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So I know that you went to LaGuardia for high school, and I'm wondering, like, did you ever imagine this sort of life? Like, what were you imagining when you were in high school?
When I was in high school, I was imagining, like, God, I would have to be so good at the trumpet to just even make it to the pit of, like, an off Broadway show. That was the trumpet dream, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was an instrumental major there, so I didn't really know what to do with that track. My schoolmates, some of them were so good. You know, the school is on the Upper West Side, so I definitely witnessed this kind of glamorous New York City lifestyle, this kind of Sex in the City version of Manhattan, that I felt that I was literally just an outsider, just kind of like, yeah. Yeah. So I, no, didn't imagine that.
What's the thing that most surprises you about the industry and about like fame in general?
I think what surprises me most about the industry is that as much as people like to think that it isn't fair, or, you know, like, it doesn't matter what you do, right? Like, there's not really any kind of moral basis. But I have found that I think there is this kind of natural filtering system within it. And that's two ways. It's actors that eventually don't want to be in it anymore, and they don't. And then the industry, if you really aren't a good person, I think that there is this kind of filtering system. And about fame, I mean, it really is the epitome of every movie you've ever seen that is kind of like, be careful what you wish for. I think, mm-hmm. you know, the idea of it, waiting for it to happen, you know, in those years, I think it doesn't feel like you thought maybe it would. And I think that there might be downsides to it as well. I said this in another interview, that it's not necessarily like the cause of depression, but it's not, you know, it doesn't cure it at all, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there certain things that you do to like stay grounded? I know that kind of sounds cheesy, but like, stay true to yourself or not let fame get to you.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like sometimes I have no choice but to feel grounded, or just that, like, I mean, and how are you supposed to feel? You know, it's like, it becomes a choice after a while. And for me, I know what it was like to work all kinds of jobs to make money, because I knew that I couldn't rely on my parents, and New York is an expensive city. I know what it's like to be broke and to like hustle, so to speak. And I think that forever informs who I continue to be. And also knowing that there's no permanence in this. So it really is a kind of a joke on you if you let it get to your head in that way.
That kind of relates to another question that I had, which was like, how do you think your upbringing or how you grew up has prepared you for the industry and for this type of career?
I'd like to think that New York City played a role in that. There's so much you witness at such a young age. There's an objective brutality, and then this kind of dark humor with it, and this constant tragedy around you, but then joy in these small moments. And it's like, the city is a fertile environment. But yeah, I don't know. I think also just like, when I was performing, and I would go, you know, to cities like Tacoma by myself, and I kind of just like stay in these random hotels and play these gigs that, you know, some of them no one even wanted me to perform there. They're just like, why are you here? You know, that has prepared me, I think, more than anything else. I think just like having to deal with a live crowd and one that's also heckling you. Have to learn how to do that. And I think that definitely prepared me for, I think, some of the rejection and the kind of the on the spot stuff of like the other parts of the industry.
How did you deal with like hecklers? I feel like that would be a shot to my self-esteem personally, but maybe you have thicker skin than I do.
I'd like to come back with some kind of like, oh, you know what I do? And then and then it's like so good. But I just feel sad, because that's the thing, though. When you lose them, you lost them, you know? I just kind of wallowed in it, you know?
Yeah. So I want to talk about films that you've been in that clearly has meant something to me as an Asian American, you know, Crazy Rich Asians, The Farewell, and now Shang-Chi. And you've been in a lot of quote unquote groundbreaking films, which is so amazing for Asian representation. But I'm just wondering, on the flip side, like, do you ever get tired of having to shoulder that, or having to like be like the face of Asian representation?
I think getting tired of it, it would never even encompass the relationship of like what that, you know, shouldering means. Mm-hmm. I've said it a lot. Like, when you first start out, you don't understand why you have to kind of shoulder it for the community. You don't understand why your choices will reflect like this entire community of these people that are very diverse. And you just want to be known as like for yourself. Mm-hmm. And what ends up happening is that like, you're just going to end up representing either way. It's like, you're, whether or not you even know it's there, it's going to be there. And I think that if that is by any definition a sacrifice or responsibility or a burden, then it's just kind of something it's just going to, you just have to take on if you choose to go into this industry. And it's also reflective of like, I don't mind it, because when you are the first, or that there's not a lot of you, it's like you're pioneering land that has never been touched before. You're building roads on land that is really hard to build a road on. So, you know, sometimes you got to start from scratch. And so that's why I think that that's not something that that bothers me, really.
Do you feel like you have to like make yourself a certain way? Like, how can you stay like be Nora when you know that you have to be this face for people? You know, because like, not all Asians are the same. And I feel like people are starting to realize that, but people weren't before. And I think that's
for sure.
Like, how can you be yourself, but still try to represent a community?
Yeah, I mean, I think that by being our authentic selves, right, by putting ourselves out there for people to surprise people, for people to see, this is the way that I grew up, you know, can you relate to it? Are there aspects about it that you relate to? And if you can't, did you learn something new or something, you know? And so I think being yourself is representation, right? Being authentically Nora, I think that's inevitably how you represent. The Farewell, for instance, literally was an actual event that Lulu simply documented. And she didn't set out to make an Asian movie. You know, she just wanted to make a movie about a story that happened to her. And so when you're doing stuff like that, it helps, but it's also, you know, personal.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to what you're saying, where it's like, can you relate to these stories? And I feel like there are a lot of themes in Crazy Rich Asians and in The Farewell that anyone can relate to.
Yeah.
What do you hope for Asian representation in the future, especially in like such a hard time with a lot of AAPI hate and continued racism? And what do you hope for the future?
I hope for the future that we continue on this kind of progression, and this is strictly in terms of the industry, we continue going into this direction of like showcasing people and voices that behind and in front of the camera that traditionally have not. And then I think Asian is such a large umbrella for just an extremely diverse group of people. And there are also groups within that that I think are, you know, they don't have the proper representation that they should. And they're not really reflected in this kind of new era of like, I would say, East Asian media. And I would also say for the future, I think we want, and this is why Crazy Rich Asians had such an effect on people, is that we want to watch things that reflect our reality. We want to watch experiences that reflect our reality. And what we have to understand about this country is that Asian Americans are part of our country's reality. We are American. And the really, really horrible attacks coming off of also a really hard year, it really shows that there's a lack of empathy and understanding, and also a lack of understanding that we are American. It's just, it's hard. It's a hard thing.
Yeah, it encompasses a lot of different feelings. I'm Chinese, but reconciling like my Chinese culture with American culture and all of that, it's that's for therapy.
Yeah, definitely. Yes.
So the Golden Globe win was just such a historic and amazing moment. And I'm wondering, how did that feel and what changed after that? Or did anything change after that?
You know, it felt just really crazy that it even happened at all, right? To know that the movie was appreciated, I'm forever grateful for that. I still, you know, can't believe that happened. But I mean, that moment was incredible because it was also a testament to like my relationship with my grandma and also the work that we put into Lulu's movie. And then after, it wasn't like all of a sudden, like the next day, it's like you could walk into Radio Shack and everything's free. You know what I mean?
I love that.
Like, oh, come on in to the back entrance of Radio Shack. It was, you know, but I do think that it does inevitably solidify, especially for people who were just like, can she do anything but just like kind of make fart jokes and things like that? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it was just really cool to that happened.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, what kind of projects do you gravitate towards now? What do you look for in a project?
I look for complexity of character. I look for kind of the motive behind it. I look for complexity in the story that also has broad elements, right, that have heart. If the script's good, the role's good, it's fluid, it makes sense, then yeah, that's what I look for. But I think I've always been picky. You know, mm-hmm. I've never done a project just because it's like, whoa, a project, you know? There has to be something else because that is also, you're dedicating a portion of your life to it. You want it to be good and worth it.
And with Awkwafina's Nora from Queens, which is going into the second season, I'm really excited about it. I think it's a great show. And like BD Wong as your dad is like the best casting choice I've ever seen in my life. And how is this season different than the first season? Or what are you most excited about for season two?
I think the first season we were trying to find, you know, a sense of identity and like where the characters were going. I think the like Lori and BD and Bowen have totally made a home in these characters and took them to directions that we never even anticipated. Season two explores things, I think, on a bit of a deeper and more different level. There's still like the absurdity, the goofiness, the craziness, but there's territory that we kind of go in that I never really thought we would. And we had, you know, BD directed an episode that's actually incredible. He did an amazing job. It's just maybe a second evolution of the characters this season.
And the characters that you play, they're normally like, you know, a little eccentric, funny, loud. And so I feel like that's how people kind of perceive you. But I wonder, how would your family and friends describe you? And like, what would the public be shocked to know about you, at like the real you?
My family would definitely describe me as the loud and kind of funny one. And then I think also many friends that meet me, they always say, like, you're moodier than I thought you would be. I do have a side where I really do kind of go into my inner mind and I just want to be alone. And I am a little moody and I'm just very kind of closed off and introspective and just like brooding, just a polar opposite of just those two states. Mm-hmm. And I think people would be just surprised to, I don't know, I really am not always loud and like crazy. I think I can get there, but generally, I run pretty chill, I think.
Yeah. And talking about your family, I know you're pretty close with them. And so I'm wondering, when you told them that you wanted to pursue entertainment and this sort of career path, like, how did they respond to that?
My family, like my aunts and uncles and cousins were like, okay, I mean, that makes sense. My dad was like having like a breakdown. He was like, what? Like, he just couldn't believe it. And my grandma was like, cool, that's awesome, you know? So that's always been the dynamic of it. It wasn't really that traditional, just like, how dare you? My grandma always supported just like every whim that I've had. My dad was just like, oh my God. And he signed me up for like all these like government job listing mailing, like meat inspectors and kind of things like that. Air traffic controllers. I still get job listings from them.
Maybe you can play a meat inspector in a movie. Fulfill that dream for your father.
I want to wear one of those coats and just be like, yes, you know.
Yeah, hazmat suit.
Good to know, too.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
And how do you stay in touch with them? I know right now you're in London and you're obviously so busy all the time. How do you stay in touch with family and friends?
I mean, I'm away for really long stretches of time and it's been hard to, you know, every time I come back home, it's like my grandma like looks older, you know, and things feel different. I make a point to FaceTime her every day. It's like talking to one of your best friends. You just leave her up, you know, fold laundry, just walk around. But yeah, I do try to go home. The pandemic and shooting made it hard. But, you know, that's one thing that I think when you start working and stuff, it's something that you feel like you kind of miss out on and that maybe you're not doing enough, you know.
Mm-hmm. How do you like deal with being on the go like all the time?
I think I'm still kind of learning how to go like crazy and work honestly provides a schedule and a routine and like a sense, you know, I got to wash my hair tonight, you know, but then it's just a weird feeling, this kind of like temperature change when all of a sudden, then all of your friends are going to work, right? And you're off for like 3 months. It's hard to retain a sense of that routine and self. Mm-hmm. I have like this recurring dream. It's like I'm in this like compound that's like an airport, bus depot, mall, casino, and hotel. Because I feel like that's, you know, when you're on the road, it's just that.
Are you just stuck in it forever in the bus depot, mall, casino?
It's like I'm almost missing a flight, but I'm trying to get from one area of it to another. And I'm never going to get there in time. And all these things happen along the way to like that distract me.
Okay, yeah. Dream decoding, yeah, whatever.
If you're down later, yeah, for sure.
You know, you put in all this hard work. You've been working for a long time. And I know you might not think this, but like, how does it feel to be like at this amazing place in your career and you're in huge films and you're becoming a household name? How does that feel? And are you prepared for it?
I don't think I'm prepared for it, if that is what happens. I mean, I don't know. I feel scary if it happens. I mean, but I also am I enjoy what I do. And I also think that, you know, scaling, fame, all that, all you have at the end of the day is like your mental health, right? Inner peace, whatever that is. None of it matters if that's off. That's what I really realized. And so like, I'm so grateful for every opportunity that happens. I can't believe that I've even come this far, but I think my priorities will always be taking care of that, of in there.
Yeah. How do you take care of in there?
Therapy is definitely recommended. I also think that you have to find out the root of like why you feel a certain way, why you're reactive, why you're angry, why you feel inadequate. I think they're all based off of somewhere. And I think you also can't put things away, things from your past, because the bad things that happened to me growing up, like the kind of the sad things, I always thought like, you know, that chapter of my life is over now, but it's like, it comes up. So you got to deal with and confront things, I think, the right way.
Mm-hmm. Which is scary, but yeah. Needs to be done. So I'm going to pivot and do like a 180. And I want to talk about like fashion now, because it is who it wear.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering like, how has your style evolved from when you started as Awkwafina, the rapper, to now the person that attends award shows and premieres? How has your style evolved from then? And I know it's over the course of like, what, over 10 years? So everyone's style evolves anyways, but I'm just wondering, how has that changed?
I feel that I've learned a lot about like how cool fashion is. And when you start to know like what people are doing, it's like, it's art, right? And I feel like confident in what my stylist, Erica Cloud, puts me in, because I feel like she coordinated it, but I don't have confidence in coordinating for myself. So I might have like awesome, cool items, but I'll never have confidence in my coordination, right? Because some people, it's like, you can put on one croc and nothing else. One croc and 8 toe rings and like a really cool vintage tee, the gin blossoms or something. And if you are confident, you're lit. You're so lit. People, the girls want a beer. You know what I mean? But like, if you don't have that confidence, it's not lit at all. But I am working on that. I'm still learning. I'm not the best dresser.
So Shang-Chi premiere, one croc and eight toe rings for you. Tell Erica now.
We're having them made right now. And they'll actually be, my toe rings will symbolize the 10 rings.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like that. I like that.
They're actually open-toed crocs. So the toes burst through the front.
You got to show them off.
Yeah, I got to show them off, dude. Yeah, for sure.
What is it like working with Erica? And are you really involved in the styling process? Or is it more like you show up and go with what she chooses?
Erica, I mean, I think there are different kinds of stylists. Erica's literally like a dream. I couldn't be happier because Erica puts a big emphasis on like comfort and like how I feel. She knows what I'm uncomfortable with. And I think it's really important to have that relationship with your stylist, you know, one that trusts your opinion and not just like, well, you clearly don't know because of your Crocs and the toe rings, you know. Erica, yeah, it's really cool to work with someone collaboratively.
What kind of things do you like to wear and what kind of things would you never wear?
I really like wearing pantsuits. I think that they're so cool. There's so many ways you could do it. I've worn some really cool pantsuits. I like onesies with pants. What I don't think I can do, just because I don't have the equipment for it really, is like something that just relies on your bust. And then really it's because then if it's not the bust, it's just the fat up here that's just like cinching it up. My worst nightmare is that it gets pulled down and I don't notice and I'm just talking to people and like getting a pig in the blanket. I also don't like very complicated with lace and heels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. It's fine because you, girl, you can really rock a pantsuit.
Oh, thank you.
It seems that you also get a little playful with your beauty looks too. And so I'm wondering, like, how do you approach beauty as well?
How I approach beauty is like, I really trust my makeup artists. I think, you know, for mostly all of my looks in recent years, Kieran Body is just like an insanely, you know, the things that we try out all the time. And then I have this other guy, Mateen, who's just like, sometimes he'll just be like, boop. And it's just like lit. It's like so good. I mean, nothing is really too crazy for me. The only thing I don't like is like really intense smoky eye, you know?
Yeah.
Unless it's like an ironic smoky eye.
Can you talk about like some of the projects that you have coming up, like The Little Mermaid? And I know you have something with Mahershala Ali coming up too.
Yeah. So the Little Mermaid, it wrapped recently. So really excited for that to come out. I did a movie in Vancouver with Mahershala Ali called Swan Song. And it was so cool working with him and the director, Ben. That was a really, really amazing experience. So I'm really excited for that to come out. And there's a movie, a DreamWorks animation movie called Bad Guys that I had been working on for a while. And we're finally getting close to putting it out. So I'm happy for that one to come out as well. And I'm doing a movie with Sandra Oh, Jessica Yu's directing. We play sisters. And so hanging out with Sandra is very fun. She's like really turned into one of my BFFs. Like we be talking, she gives me advice and she's just so cool.
Yeah. Okay. And then so we were thinking it would be fun to do like a lightning round. And so I wanted to ask a couple questions on your favorite New York-y things.
All right.
So the first question is your favorite place to eat.
Taiwanese gourmet. David's Taiwan.
Your favorite subway line.
The R.
Your favorite New York monument or like touristy thing?
The Alice in Wonderland, you know.
Sports team?
The Mets. Come on.
I saw you throughout the pitch.
Yeah, that was so fun.
Late night snack?
The meat sticks in Flushing or Great NY Noodle Town, Mahmood's, Halal.
Favorite bar?
Fat Buddha.
And best place to karaoke?
MK. MK is the best. I love MK. Yes.
Thank you so much, Nora.
Thank you, Sarah. That was really fun.
A huge thank you to Sarah Yang and Awkwafina. Make sure to subscribe to our show wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss an episode. And while you're there, I would be so grateful if you would rate and review us. If you have any guest suggestions or any other feedback, drop us a line at podcast@whowhatwhere.com or you can find us on social @whowhatwhere. See you next Wednesday on Who What Where with Hillary Kerr. This episode was produced by Hillary Kerr and Olivia Capoletti. Editing is by Natalie Thurman and Treehouse Recording in Los Angeles, California. Our music is by Jonathan Leahy.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.